Stacey Corcoran Podcast.
Look, Abbott, if you're the coach, you must know all the players.
I certainly do.
Well, you know, I never met the guys, so you'll have to tell me their names, and then I'll know who's playing on the team.
Oh, I'll tell you their names, but you know, strange it may seem, they give these ballplayers nowadays very peculiar names.
You mean funny names?
Strange names, pet names, like Dizzy Dean and...
His brother Daffy.
Daffy Dean.
I'm their French cousin.
French?
Gouffet.
Gouffet Dean, oh, I see. Well, let's see, we have on the bags, we have who's on first, what's on second, I don't know is on third.
That's what I want to find out.
I say, who's on first, what's on second, I don't know's on third.
Are you the manager?
Yes.
You're going to be the coach too?
Yes.
And you know the fellow's name?
Well, I should.
Well, then who's on first?
Yes.
I mean the fellow's name.
Who?
The guy on first.
Who?
The first baseman.
Who?
The guy playing
who
first.
Who is on first?
I'm asking you who's on first.
That's the man's name.
That's whose name?
Yes.
Well, go ahead and tell me.
That's it.
That's who?
Yes.
Look, you got a first baseman?
Certainly.
Who's playing first?
That's right.
When you pay off the first baseman every month, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
All I'm trying to find out is the fellow's name on first base.
Who?
The guy that gets the
money. That's it.
Who gets the money on
he
first
base? He does, every dollar. Sometimes his wife comes down and collects it.
Whose wife?
Yes. What's wrong with that?
Look, all I want to know is when you sign up the first baseman, how does he sign his name to
who?
The contract? The guy.
Who?
How does he sign his
that's
name?
That's how he signs it.
Who?
Yes.
All I'm trying to find out is what's the guy's name on first base.
No, what is on second base?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
One base at a time.
Well, don't change the players.
I'm not changing nobody.
Take it easy, buddy.
I'm only asking you, who's the guy on first base?
That's right.
Okay.
All right.
I mean, what's the guy's name on first base?
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on second.
Who's on first?
I don't know.
Oh, he's on third. We're not talking about him. Now, let's begin.
How did I get on third base?
Why, you mentioned his name.
If I mention a third baseman's name, who did I say is playing third?
No, who's playing first?
What's on first?
What's on second?
I don't know.
He's on third.
There I go, back on third again. Will you stay on third base
all
and
right.
Don't go off it?
All right, I don't want to know.
Now, who's playing third base?
Why do you insist on putting who on third base?
What am I putting on third?
Oh, what is on second?
You don't want who on second.
Who is on first?
I don't know. Third base! Outfield?
Sure.
The left fielder's name.
Why?
I just thought I'd ask.
Well, I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me who's playing left field.
Who is playing first?
I'm not. Stay out of the infield.
Oh,
I want to know what's the guy's name in left field.
No, what is on second?
I'm not asking you who's on
who's
second.
Who's on first?
I don't know. Third base.
Hello, Flicey. How are you?
I'm doing all right.
Good. Now, Flicey, you're a whore, aren't you?
Yeah.
Well, I was thinking that maybe I'd like to patronize some of the whores who work on your corner.
Well, I gotta warn you, nowadays whores have very peculiar names.
Funny names?
Nicknames. Example, on the corner I work, who does oral, what uses a hand, and I don't know, takes it in the keister.
That's what I want to find out.
I told you, who does oral, what uses a hand, and I don't know, takes it in the keister.
Do you know the whore's name?
Hell yeah.
Well, then who does oral?
That's right.
The whore that does oral.
Who?
I'm asking you.
And I'm telling you.
Look, what's the name of the whore that does oral?
No, what uses her hand?
I'm not asking you who uses her hand.
Who does oral?
I don't know.
She takes it in the keister.
Look, after I get oral, who gets the money?
Every dollar of it.
Who does?
That's right, and why not? The bitch deserves it.
Who deserves it?
Naturally.
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 So naturally does oral.
No. Who does oral?
Naturally.
You got it.
So, naturally does oral.
No, who does oral?
Look, what's the name of the whore that does oral?
No, what uses her hand?
I don't know.
She takes it in the keister.
Again, I'm back to the keister. Look, do you have a pimp?
Of course. A fine bunch of whores this would be without a pimp.
The pimp's name?
Why?
I just thought I'd ask you.
And I just thought I'd tell you.
Then tell me, who's the pimp?
No, who does oral?
I don't know. She takes it in the keister.
Now, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest as jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Stacey Corcoran Podcast is open for business here on Wednesday, the 28th of April, 2021. I'm JC. It's going to be a very, very wet day in the St. Louis area today. If you have tickets for tonight's ball game, I got bad news for you. You're probably not going. I'm talking about 1 to 2 inches of I almost said snow, rain, and that is going to really interrupt things. I don't see any way they can play, but I've said that before, and amazingly, the sky just sort of dries up, and the next thing you know, they're playing ball, so who knows? I now have 729 blocks on Facebook. I counted them yesterday. I was bored. I didn't know what to do, so I figured let me count all my blocks. We have blocked 729 people, and I'm very proud of it. In the third inning of last night's Cardinal game, Nolan Arenado ran 93 feet with his back to the infield, straight towards the bricks along third base, and made an astonishing play. Those of you who were around in the 1985 World Series will remember Terry Pendleton making a famous play similar to the one that I just described. And I'm telling you, this Arenado thing last night was unbelievable as the Cardinals win. Again, we have George Carlin on the show here today. We did an interview with him back in 2001 for a book. I almost said snow, and that is a movie. For a book he did called Napalm and Silly Putty. And the funny part of the interview was we did a 10-minute interview with him about a week before he was due in St. Louis for a concert. And then they were doing one of those book club things on KMOX, and they were having George as the guest. And I'm thinking to myself, George Carlin on KMOX? So we have a lot of fun with that. It's impossible to tell how many thousands, maybe even every hundreds of thousands of people got into show business after watching George Carlin on the Ed Sullivan Show back in the late 60s and then his subsequent albums. We'll talk all that over with him, George Carlin, coming up as our JC Celebrity A-List interview of the day. Look, I don't think anybody enjoys being called a purist when it comes to baseball. There are those of us who think that the game needs some tweaking. I think that's pretty much everybody. Well, these people who are making widespread changes to the game of baseball, really upsetting the institution of the game, are nuts. And unfortunately, the commissioner, Rob Manfred, is one of them. Last year, MLB started putting a runner on second base in extra innings as a way to keep the games from dragging on too long. The response, mixed. One of MLB's partner leagues, the Pioneer League Minor League Baseball, is going to be replacing extra innings with a head-to-head sudden-death home run derby. So kind of like a shootout in the NHL. It sounds simple. One player from each team will get five pitches, and whoever hits the most home runs wins. If there's still a tie, there's another round with each team picking a different hitter. Now, the question is, who's going to be pitching? Probably, safe to say, somebody from the batter's home team, but this thing seems sort of half-baked to me. Tonight on Axis TV, if you are not interested in watching Joe Biden's address to the nation, you can watch John Fogerty and his two kids on Axis, AXS TV with Dan Rather. The shows have been largely fantastic. Fourth season premiere of The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu tonight. And then late night, Brian Regan will be on with Jimmy Fallon, Justin Theroux, Mike Lindell. The MyPillow guy is going to be on with Jimmy Kimmel. Kimmel was riding the hell out of him, and then Lindell started barking back at him. And then Jimmy Kimmel said, well, I'll put you on the show. And Lindell said yes. And so yeah, that's going to be a pretty good show. Justin Theroux, Mike Lindell, and Tom Jones all on Jimmy Kimmel tonight. Colbert has Bernie Sanders, James Corden, Jason Schwartzman, Elizabeth Moss from The Handmaid's Tale with Seth Meyers, and our old buddy Louis Anderson is going to be on with Conan. Louis used to do the show with us. He'd sit in the studio with me. And then a couple of days later, I'd get a postcard from the road. And Louis was the sweetest guy ever. I mean, he really was. And I don't know why I'm saying it in the past tense. He's still very much alive. 31 years ago today, we arrived in the former Soviet Union. And how the whole thing happened is a great story. If you know your history, you'll remember the fall of communism and, you know, the knocking down of the Berlin Wall and all that sort of stuff. And suddenly Russia was open for business and it wasn't the Soviet Union anymore. So we're like, well, let's go. And we talked the station into it, and they're like, okay, we'll send the show over there. So we're like, all right. So we make the announcement that we're going, and then KMOX comes along and then said, well, we're going to Russia. Like, well, we announced it first, and we're going first. Well, they sent this guy from KMOX, Bob Hardy, they sent him there 1 day earlier than us. And then they claimed at KMOX that they had the first broadcast. They did not. to lie. They had Bob Hardy on the phone sending in some segments to KMOX just to beat us by one day. But we set up and we did our entire show, the entire 4 hours every day from Radio Moscow. But it included all the stuff that we had recorded out on the streets, including at noon every day in Moscow. A couple of hundred guys all clutching copies of the Moscow News stand in front of the newspaper building and they stand around there and shout at each other about politics. And so we went to that with our tape recorder and recorded great stuff. And this was also the time where the first McDonald's opened in Moscow. And so we grabbed this guy who was the president of the Greater St. Louis Consortium of McDonald's restaurants, a guy by the name of John McCook. Odd that I would remember his name after all these times. And so we went with him and he got us into the McDonald's, and that was really cool. 39 cash registers. I still remember the count on those things. It was the biggest McDonald's I ever saw. And people always want to ask the question, how did the burgers taste? Did it taste like American McDonald's? The answer is absolutely. It tasted exactly the same. But, you know, at noon, out front of the place, we counted over 400 people in line. 400! You know, a lot of it was curiosity on the part of the Russian people, and we understood that. So all that stuff was part of the show. We did our show, the entire show, from Moscow. KMOX was phoning in a couple of segments here and there. But, of course, the St. Louis media and, of course, the Post Disgrace, they wanted the story to be that KMOX was first, not us. And so that's how they wrote it. That's how they covered it. And the whole thing was a lie. Par for the course. This is how it sounded. It didn't sound like KMOX, I'll tell you that.
And we're at the McDonald's, and we got Victor, our interpreter, here. First of all, you've been to McDonald's several times, right?
Yeah, I've been here 5 times or 6 times, and I enjoyed every time.
How about you, Ray? You've been a communist for a long time. And
I've never seen anything quite like the sight you see when you walk in and see how huge and cavernous this McDonald's is. It's not like any McDonald's anyone else has ever seen.
All right, Victor, let's see if we can talk to some of these folks here. Let's see if we can have these two young gals here. Could you explain what we're doing here?
Это американская радиостанция, и мы хотели взять у вас небольшое интервью насчет Макдональдс.
Really threw her for a loop, Victor. Are you sure you told her what we're doing, or did you make something
up? I did.
Well, let's ask the first question.
Так, первый вопрос такой.
How long she's been in line here?
Вы сколько уже в очереди стоите приблизительно?
6 minutes.
Six minutes. Oh, good. That's very good.
You need glass, yeah.
Okay, Victor, take a hike. We don't need you. Let's ask her if she's ever had food from McDonald's before.
А вы уже раньше в McDonald's были здесь?
No.
No.
What do you expect? What do you think a hamburger from McDonald's will taste like?
I don't know about McDonald's. I want to visit this restaurant.
Good morning, St. Louis. Good afternoon, Moscow time.
Добрый день.
Now, this is the guy, in case you're wondering who Bob Abernathy is, when Tom Brokaw is sitting there at NBC News in New York or Washington, wherever he happens to be, and says, for the report, let's go to Moscow. You're the guy.
I'm the guy. I'm the guy in the morning. I'm the guy at night. I'm the guy who doesn't see my family.
And you always have to get the cameraman to get you in the shot, and then like St. Basil's Cathedral or Lenin's Tomb in the back.
Greatest stand-up locations in the world.
What are some of the other great background shots as a reporter that you do?
All around the Kremlin, from a bridge, a couple of bridges over the Moscow River.
How about that giant swimming pool out there that we saw the other day? Is that the wildest thing you have ever seen? There's a swimming pool.
You know what
pool.
That used to be?
What?
That used to be the cathedral. Stalin blew it up.
He blew it up and left the hole, and they filled it with water, and it's a year-round swimming pool.
That's right.
And she is. Видели, видели какие фильмы с участием?
С Рейганом.
He saw a piece with Reagan, but he. Вы помните название фильма?
Фильм не помню, но отдельные клипы показывали по телевидению у нас с Рейганом.
We had a TV show, and they had some pieces, some videos about with Reagan taking part in them.
Did they see with a monkey, with a chimpanzee?
А вы видели его с обезьяной, с манки, с шимпанзе?
Нет.
No.
Ask him if he's a sports fan.
Вы любите спорт?
Да, люблю спорт.
Yes.
Does he know anything about American sports figures?
Вы думаете, вы знаете что-нибудь об американских спортсменах известных?
Ну, я знаю Джо Луис Паттерсон.
Джо Луис Паттерсон.
Чак Норрис.
Чак Норрис. Yeah. Sports figure. Chuck Norris.
Я думаю, что Чак Норрис, он бы проиграл в Советском Союзе.
Чак Норрис, if he came to the Soviet Union, he would not win if he came to the Soviet Union. Because in the Soviet Union we have a lot of karate schools. And they are better than the United States.
Hey gang, this is JC, and Wednesday on The Breakfast Club, live from the Soviet Union, we talked with a Moscow radio disc jockey.
People like very much classic rock. Actually, I got a couple of telephone calls. They say, why don't you really give the teenagers the stuff we've been raised on, like Rolling Stones, The Doors, The Beatles, 10 years after Santana, this type of music.
And we talked to the Soviet citizens in line at the Moscow McDonald's.
Would you have any kind of a message for the American people?
Передайте американским людям, вот пока вы сейчас даете интервью.
Ну, чтобы побольше у нас, наверное, таких кафе было, чтобы не было таких очередей, чтобы мы свободно могли прийти.
Plus, the Moscow correspondent for NBC News, Bob Abernathy, checked in.
We have an apartment. We live in an apartment furnished by the government.
Is it up to your expectations?
Oh, yeah.
Can we stay there?
And we saw some kid in front of the Moscow News building wearing a Chicago Cubs jersey.
No, I don't know.
Tell him that the Chicago Cubs have been a losing team since 1908.
Эта команда с 1908 года не выиграла ни одного соревнования.
We'll see you back in St. Louis Monday. До свидания from JC and Joe and the Breakfast Club.
I'm telling you right now, I'm doing this next story with a degree of restraint, and I will explain why in just a couple of seconds. So, you know, when they have the big political conventions and it comes down to casting the electoral votes, the great state of Illinois, the land of Lincoln, casts all our electoral votes, you know, that sort of stuff. Pretty much whatever's on your license plate. The state of Colorado, the Rocky Mountain state, the state of New Jersey, the Garden State. And then some states have a little more trouble with that. The great state of Alabama, 48th in education and health care. Watch out, Mississippi. We're coming for you. And that kind of crap. But it's like, you know, every state has to have some sort of calling card, some sort of slogan. As David Letterman said the night we had St. Louis night at the Late Show with David Letterman in New York, said, you people are from Show Me State. Welcome to New York, the Bite Me State. Florida named their championship hockey team the Lightning. And when your entire reason for existence is tourism, it wouldn't seem like lightning would be the thing that you'd want to reinforce. You couldn't imagine California saying, the great state of California, home to the biggest wildfires and mudslides. I mean, the idea is to reinforce something positive about your state. The land of freaking Lincoln, Minnesota, land of 1,000 lakes. Again, pretty much whatever's on your license plate, that's what you get. But to reinforce the idea where you're asking people, come to our state, come to our beaches, be outside, it's lovely, the weather is beautiful, the sun is shining, oh, by the way, you could get hit by lightning at any moment. It doesn't make any sense that they would reinforce that idea. It's like if cities did that, you couldn't imagine St. Louis going, come to St. Louis, you've seen us on the news, right? Are you sure you still want to come? But yeah, Florida is the lightning. That's the whole thing. The Tampa Bay Lightning. And why is that? Because every piece of data that's been available up until now indicates that there are more lightning strikes in the state of Florida than anywhere else in America. Whoa, hold on. Hold on. According to a team of meteorologists, it turns out now that Oklahoma recorded the highest lightning flash density per square kilometer during the past five-year stretch from 2016 to 2020, but the numbers are very, very close. For example, in Oklahoma, there were 83.4 lightning events per square kilometer compared to Florida at 82.8. So less than a full percentage point. And it's even more complicated than that because the National Weather Service guys said, yeah, it's also deceiving because Oklahoma has more cloud-to-cloud lightning, but Tampa and the state of Florida have more cloud-to-ground lightning, and that's the dangerous kind, obviously, because we happen to be on the ground, not up in the clouds. By the way, according to the National Weather Service, the odds of being struck are 1 in 15,300 over the course of a lifetime, which is defined as 80 years. What's also amazing is these stories about like these mountain rangers, these guys who, you know, like go a couple of months sitting up in a tower and they give you a set of binoculars and your entire job is just to look all over the place and make sure that no wildfires break out. And if you do, you have some sort of a two-way radio and you say, okay, we've got one here, because lightning obviously causes a lot of forest fires. So you sit there up in the tower and, you know, once a week, helicopter comes flying in and drops a big box of food and you live up there. It actually sounds sort of cool. You know, if you're like 20, 21, 22 years old and a guy, there's a famous Chicago radio personality who, when he was a kid, he grew up in Idaho, and that was his job for the entire summer. He didn't see a human being for the entire summer. Sat up there on the tower and just watched four forest fires. Now, again, now we have satellite technology and sensors and all sorts of different ways to determine whether or not there's a fire, but still probably the most efficient way is to have guys sitting up in the towers, you know, 50, 70 miles away from one another, and just go out there and just sit and make sure you got those binoculars out every couple of minutes, making sure that, especially when there's a storm going through, you know, that nothing gets hit by lightning and causes a fire. And it is those guys who tend to get hit by lightning a lot. In fact, there was one guy, I remember reading this story on the air maybe 15, 20 years ago, and it was a guy who had been struck by lightning seven times he had been hit by lightning, survived them all, and then one day he killed himself. And at the time, there was wide speculation. It's like when there's a plane crash and one guy's sitting there and he survives and the guy next to him dies in the plane crash. And apparently, it really ends up messing with your head. And there's all sort of, psychological implications to something like that. Seven times hit by lightning, you survive them all, and then you do yourself in. And apparently, that's not uncommon. I don't know what happens, but something does. You get hit by lightning and you're much more likely to take your own life at some point down the line. June 28, 2011, 18 children killed and 36 others hospitalized by a lightning strike at a school in Uganda. To prevent similar tragedies, they put together little poems for the kids like, "When the thunder roars, go indoors." I remember about 10 or 12 years ago, there was a guy walking down Delmar, like a little bit east of the Schnucks Plaza there, and he's just walking along during a thunderstorm and got struck and killed by lightning. There was a guy, I want to say this was probably 30 years ago, there was a guy down in Fenton, and he was getting ready for a softball game. And what was interesting about that is that the sun was still out, even though you could see the storm approaching. But like they say, and this is something that usually surprises people, but one of those big summer storms is approaching, lightning can strike as part of that storm as far as 20 miles away. So in theory, you could be downtown or in the Central West End, and a storm in Chesterfield could produce lightning that could hit you in the city. But this guy in Fenton was sitting on a metal grandstand, and a lightning came down, hit that, and he was electrocuted. One of the dumbest things I ever did in college, when I think about this now, I guess this is just things you do when you're young and you're stupid. But there was a thunderstorm moving, and I was at college. I went to summer school my final year in college. So this was in the summer of 74. And like one of those big-ass storms was approaching DeKalb, Illinois, up in northern Illinois. And I'm like, I'm going to go outside and sort of watch the storm approach. And you could hear the thunder off in the distance. You could tell the storm was coming closer and closer. The National Weather Service guys were putting up warnings. And I'm standing outside. And at one point, I could actually hear the sound of electricity, like a sizzle, like one of those things, just for like a half a second. And then lightning hit really, really close to me. I don't know how close, but it was damn close. The last time I ever did that. Now, at the beginning of the story, I said I had a degree of reticence about reading, and that's because my good friend Gary Bennett, who worked at Keishi for years and years and years, and every weekend did the Feats at Five with Little Feet. You probably remember Gary. I still see him every few months. His sister was vacationing in Sarasota, Florida. I think it was 90 or 91, walking along the beach. Bam, struck and killed by lightning. So you can talk to me all you want about the enormous odds against actually being struck by lightning. But when you stop to think about it, 1 in 15,300, I'm not sure I like those odds.
Comedian is the best job there is. You spend all day observing your fellow human beings, and then at night you go somewhere and tell them what worthless people they are. And you get paid for it and you win an award. It's a great universe. I hope it goes on forever.
We got the old tunes, the new tunes, the show tunes, the blue tunes, the greatest music in town. But we never play it.
In 2001, George Carlin released a book called Napalm and Silly Putty, and we had him on the air, and as I mentioned a little while ago, it was pretty cool because we had him on the air a week before he was scheduled to do this appearance at KMOX for their book club, so we had a little fun with that. We got along especially well with George because I had worked with him a half a dozen times or so prior to that, but also we became really good friends with his opening act, a guy with the name of Dennis Blair. So you'll hear references to that, but Dennis opened for George Carlin for something like 14 years. Let's flash back 20 years this year to our conversation with George Carlin.
1967, Takeoffs and Put-Ons, recorded live at the Rooster Tail in Detroit, Michigan.
Right.
And
right.
It was a seminal moment in my life. George Carlin, welcome to St. Louis. How are you?
Thank you. I'm doing fine, and thanks for that memory.
Absolutely. The book is called Napalm and Silly Putty. What are you trying to do in the books that you are not able to achieve in live shows or concert films or any of the other kind of venues that you play?
There's some things that are suitable mostly for the page to be read, not to be listened to. And then there are things I did on stage which I've adapted to the book, which I want people to see because of the content, because of the attitudes in it. This is one of those jobs, being funny is one of those occupations or whatever it is, where you are trying to get other people's attention. So the book is another way of further publishing and sending out these jokes, these thoughts and observations that I have.
Now, George, Karen and I were in Las Vegas, as we said, last August, and we've been friends with Dennis right. for about 10 or 12 years now.
Yeah.
And we were thinking maybe we'd even get a chance, a couple of moments to spend with you. And Dennis, remember what Dennis said? Oh, my God. George is like, he's like holed up in his hotel room. He's not even coming out. He's trying to finish this book. What kind of mode do you go into? And given the fact that the job of comedian is kind of observational, isn't it kind of hard to write when you're sequestered? I mean, don't you need to kind of be out there observing to be able to do it, or is it all just introspective?
Well, I'm 63 now, and I've collected a lot of observations along the way and saved them and kept them kind of in neat categories. So I have a storehouse of things, and television is obviously a window on the rest of the world. If you leave it on and you don't really get locked into it, just let it play, you pick up a lot of things about the zeitgeist. But the other answer is I write every day. It's not always writing with a narrow purpose to finish an essay or a book or something. Sometimes it's just to improve the files, to go through the files and start to combine things and upgrade them and bring things from one level of completion to another. So it's just a constant maintenance of this inventory of stuff I have, and sometimes it gets more intense when book time is bearing down. It gets more intense.
One other thing, though, about Dennis, because you've been in your opening act for many years now.
A long time together with Dennis. He's terrific.
He's great. He's great. And just
we love him.
Great guy to hang out with, and he told us a little story about driving with you.
Yes.
And killing time. And a lot of times there would be situations where you'd be going from, like, Buffalo to Rochester, and instead of taking a plane or something like that.
That's a close one. We drive longer ones than that, but go ahead.
But you would just drive along. But he told, could you expound on this a little bit? He just kind of scratched the surface as to how you two guys entertain one another, and it had to do with, like, combinations of really kind of gross, disgusting ideas all jammed together.
Yes. Well, Jerry Hams is in that, too, my manager and a longtime friend, and we promote our own dates, so Jerry's also technically the promoter. We just give vent to our uncensored sides, really filthy, gross, disrespectful, hardly sacred things, but family, not each other. We don't, we just sing impromptu. So, you'll break out with an impromptu song, and usually filled with all sorts of, not just filthy, but very imaginative sort of activities.
You got a lot of latitude here. Could you give us one? I mean, you got pretty good.
You don't have the latitude for this.
Otherwise, we're back at WBAI here again, right. Or whatever it was. Yeah.
Well, yeah, right. So, but I'm protecting you by telling you.
Now, people who see your show would say, well, now, see, now that's an adult show. That's for adults. And yet, yeah, particularly in the book, which is called Napalm and Silly Putty, and it's available now. By the way, the interview with Jesus Christ is absolutely classic. It is absolutely sensational. You. People should get the book for the interview with Jesus alone. That's
I'm proud of that. It's about 4 pages, and he turns out to be kind of a regular guy.
Yeah. But, you know, over the years, I mean, you know, at 63 years old, you are still as hip as you were when you were in your 20s. You're still cutting edge. You're still doing all those words that people talk about, which basically translate into you're not getting old on us. How are you doing that?
Well, I think there are people who, when we look at them, we say, geez, you know, he's old. Those people who are old all their lives, there are people who are old no matter what age they are. They just have old thinking. They have conventional, standard, stuck, traditional outlooks, and they believe everything they hear, and they go along with the system as it's given to them. But there are many people who are, when they're older and we say about them, gee, he's full of pep and ideas, and he seems like he's a young, and you know, that's because a person was always like that, I think. People just have personalities that last, and I have always questioned anything that was told to me. I just don't accept all this stuff they tell you in this country, whether it's religion or patriotism or any of these nonsensical fairy tale myths that they try to get you to believe in so they can keep you in line. I've always questioned them, and that's why there's a large number of young people, teens and early 20s, at these concerts I do, because they like that sort of irreverent, disrespectful attitude, and it's something that comes out of me in a genuine way. So I've learned how, over the years, I've just learned to express it better. Yeah, I know comedy's not better. Nothing's better than it was 30 years ago. and go a little farther than that. Right, this whole civilization of ours peaked at around 1946, and it's been downhill since. But that's like old fart talk. It sounds like old fart. I can back it up with facts. It's not just nostalgia, but that's a different conversation. I like guys like Lewis Black. I like Mitch Hedberg. I like Kevin Meaney. I like Norm Macdonald when he's doing his stand-up. I like people who have a slightly dark tone to them and offbeat, from very unusual, from left field. There are funny people who are sort of conventional, and they're funny, but the people who come from odd places, such as Stephen Wright always did, those people interest me, because that's the kind of, I think, what comedy ought to do is find the uninspected corners and the little areas that we know a little about, and the comedian takes you the rest of the way.
All right, now, because you are and have been such an inspiration to so many people who are in this business or related businesses, I'm going to give you a heads up, because we rarely do this. You're coming into town next week to work to do some things with another competing radio station of ours.
That's right.
All of those things that you said about believing everything that the government tells you and people being old before their time all apply. I'm giving you a heads up, because this is like bringing you into that radio station next week is kind of like, you know, bringing in Solzhenitsyn at the Kremlin. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if this is an ambush and you have a Milwaukee all over again. So I'm giving you a heads up, George. Be aware of that.
I'm aware of 50,000 watt clear channel stations and what it implies. And I go and I do the things I need to do my way wherever I am. And if people aren't comfortable with it, they mostly keep it to themselves, I feel.
Yeah. All right. Now, the last time I saw you, it was a day that I will always remember, because you always have these things like, where were you when this happened? Where were you when that happened? And in this particular case, we're talking about 1988 in the basement of the Westport Playhouse. And George Carlin is supposed to go on stage at about 10:15, and I am the MC, but the show is not starting. And do you remember why it wasn't starting on time? There was a little issue involving the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Oh, okay. Well, now fill me in, because they're one of my more severe hatreds, so I must have been wishing for them to lose something.
This was the Kirk Gibson home run. We had a color television downstairs in one of the dressing rooms. And you could
what a shame that was.
Yeah, you could see the whole thing developing, and you knew, and you're thinking to yourself, the drama and the whole thing. And they're like, well, just go outside and tell them we're going to come back. We're going to start the show any minute. Kirk Gibson hits the home run. I walk out on stage, ladies and gentlemen, George Carlin. And that's where it went from there. It was a great night.
Well, you know, even if the team you hate wins, it's nice to see a little of that ballpark drama. I do like those things. I like people under pressure. I like to see people snap.
Okay. Well, we might see George Carlin in that position next week.
That's
here
right.
In St. Louis, all right?
Ready to snap at any time.
All right, the book is called Napalm and Silly Putty, Quips, Probes, Thrusts, Screeds, Japes, Taunts, Insults, Musings, Harangues, and Verbal Ordeals. And it goes on from there, by the way. And
that's
it's,
right.
It's published by Hyperion Press. And it's out now. And George Carlin, thank you very much for being such an inspiration over the years. We did have some callers standing by. We can't get to them. Mrs. Tondaleo Breckenridge is standing by.
It's good old Tondaleo. Thanks for the chance to talk about the book and say hello to KMOS.
Thanks, George.
What a trip. He was the absolute best. And I hope you enjoyed that. And I hope you enjoyed today's edition for Wednesday, the 28th of April, 2021, here at jcontheline.com. As we always ask, please spread the word. Tell everybody you know who used to listen to the old radio shows that we are here every weekday morning, bright and early at 7, although you can download it and listen whenever you want all day. And we are working on getting the old shows archived, so look for some sort of an announcement on that very, very soon. All right, watch out for the rain and the flooding today. For those of you in the St. Louis area, come hell or high water, we're back tomorrow morning here at jcontheline.com. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.